regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Stephen Gutowski from The Reload about what happened in Richmond on Wednesday, one-day session of the legislature to deal with Governor Spanberger's proposed amendments to a number of bills, and the Democrat-controlled legislature actually rejected a number of the governor's recommendations, including the governor's proposed changes to the definition of a, quote, assault firearm, unquote. They did, however, go along with some of the governor's other changes, and the bottom line is that Virginia's gun laws are going to get a whole lot worse come July 1st, at least for those of us who care about and want to protect the right to keep and bear arms. Take a look and a listen. Stephen, thanks very much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So here we are. Yesterday was decision day at the state legislature in Virginia. The Democrats in control of the House and Senate had the opportunity to override Governor Spanberger's vetoes. To accept her amendments on bills, to reject her amendments on bills. And they didn't, she didn't veto any gun bills, first of all. So that was not an issue for the Democrats. But she did amend multiple, or at least offer amendments to multiple gun control bills. Not all of those amendments were accepted. Some of them were. But let's start, I think, with the top priority for gun control activists, and probably the biggest bill as far as gun owners are concerned as well, the ban on assault firearms and large capacity magazines. When we had you on last week, we were talking about the governor's proposed amendment, which would have reclassified or redefined an assault firearm to be any semi-automatic firearm that's equipped with a magazine of more than 15 rounds. And I know we were talking last week about, did she intend for it to be that way? Yes, she did. I saw a quote from one of her spokespersons saying that, yeah, that's absolutely her reading of this. That was intentional. But the Democrats in the legislature did not go along with that recommendation. They passed it by, right? So they didn't vote it down. They just didn't take it up during yesterday's one-day session.
Yeah, that's right. It's so effectively the magazine carry ban scheme is sort of a roundabout way of trying to ban people from carrying magazines that have more than 15 rounds, even though, under the sales ban, you could still keep the ones you previously owned before July 1st. The governor was trying to inject this carry ban, and that has now failed because even though, it was sort of a two-part scheme, right? She had the change in the sales ban definition of what constitutes an assault firearm,
right,
by removing fixed from the first definition. So just any semi-auto pistol or rifle that has that center fire and has a magazine of, or is with a magazine capacity of 15 or more rounds, as confusing as that language is, it seemed to, at the very least, then there are possibly even more implications for that language change, but at the very least, it seemed when coupled with the assault firearms carry ban that the legislature has also passed, and the changes the governor wanted to make to that, which was basically just conforming the definition in the carry ban with the definition in the sales ban, mm-hmm, that she had changed, that would have made it illegal to carry a gun that has a magazine with more than 15 rounds in it. So, or the capacity to hold more than 15 rounds, to be very clear. Yeah. But even though the legislature accepted the change to the carry ban, because literally all it does is conform the definition to the
it
one.
It says, assault firearm as defined by, and then it gives the section of statute.
Exactly. Instead of her change was to say, instead of having the carry ban have its own definition, we'll just make it the same definition as what's in the sales ban. And then she wanted to change the definition of the sales ban. Now they they accepted her change to the carry ban, but it doesn't have this effect of banning the magazines for carry because they rejected the change to the definition of assault firearm in the governor's recommendation in the sales ban. So that is obviously, it's very complex. It was a very roundabout way of doing this. I don't know why she didn't just add to the carry ban a section that says you can't carry the magazines, but this was how they went about doing it. And it is interesting. I hadn't heard that her spokesperson confirmed that was the intention, but that did seem to be the effect. And so it's, that's not going to
happen. Let's put it that way. And you know, and it's interesting. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out why the Democrats did not go along with this change.
Yeah.
Saddam Saleem, who is the Senate author of the Assault Fireman magazine ban, said he was ready. He was fine with accepting the changes. But House and Senate leadership did not. I asked a friend of mine who works on the Republican side of things in the state capitol. You know, I said, what happened? And he said they didn't have the votes. And I was like, well, clearly, but why didn't they have the votes? I guess is the bigger question. You know, I've seen some people say, well, you know, listen, she didn't really care. She was just trying to, you know, push this off past the referendum. I think she was trying to push it off past the referendum, but that doesn't explain why she tried to make the bill worse.
Right.
It also doesn't explain why Democrats didn't go along after the referendum had passed. So it is a little confusing. I know that, you know, there is some butthurt, I think is the scientific term for it, among Democrat lawmakers that the governor was not apparently as involved in the legislative process throughout the session, that they're kind of blindsided by the number of bills that got returned to them with recommended changes. I don't know that personality conflict was the reason why the Democrats did not go along with this change, but you know, it's still a bad bill. It's just not any worse than it was on Monday, right? I mean, that's
right, and that's important. That's important to understand
as of July the 1st, and I expect that she will sign this bill into law. I don't think she's gonna.
Yeah, I guess that's the one thing that the most wild outcome could be that she gets mad that they didn't accept these changes and vetoes the assault firearm sales ban. But I think that's also the least likely.
I suspect that you're right.
She'll probably just sign it.
So assuming she does sign it as of July 1st. You will not be able to purchase magazines that can hold more than 15 rounds. You will not be able to purchase these assault firearms, which basically a features test ban. This is not like the Go Safe Act, where every gas-operated semi-automatic firearm is banned. It's more the Feinstein-style assault weapon ban.
Although it is a one-feature ban instead. The old ones, the 90s ones, were two features.
That's right.
So they cut down to you can't even have one of these kind of features, which means one that it impacts a lot more
for
guns.
Long guns, two features for pistols, I believe.
Right. Yes, correct. And the features are different for pistols and long guns. But
right. Yeah. So again, I mean, this is still going to encompass, you know, a lot of commonly available firearms. And we've seen, you know, the response already. I mean, gun sales up tremendously in Virginia, really since the start of the legislative session. I expect that's going to continue right up until June 30th. As people, you know, I saw, I think, a post on X from Palmetto State Armory saying they're working, I think, two shifts just dedicated to Virginia sales at this point right now. So, you know, like a lot of these states, they ban these guns, and the short term impact is they put a lot more of them on the street,
yeah,
in the homes of residents.
Absolutely.
But this was not the only gun control bill that came up yesterday. So you mentioned the carry ban, and this will again apply on starting July the 1st. You will not be able to carry a quote unquote assault firearm on city streets, sidewalks, public parks. This law has already been in place in like Northern Virginia and a couple of other localities, but now this applies statewide. There was a exception for individuals with a concealed carry permit. As I understand it, that exception is gone. So now this is just a flat out prohibition, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Although all that stuff was already in there to begin with.
Okay.
So the governor's change was, you know, I had initially thought because obviously the way Virginia is fairly unique here. Most states don't give the governor like a attempt to amend bills that have already passed the legislature, but they also, Virginia doesn't do a great job of showing you exactly what's different between the governor's recommendation, right, and how it passed. So some of this stuff, you know, I think Phil Van Cleve, a couple other people who follow this really closely, you can get stuff wrong. Mm-hmm. And I had thought that initially the governor had recommended taking out exceptions for off-duty and retired law enforcement as well, which is one reason I thought maybe the carry ban was going to be, you know, her changes were going to be at risk. But it turned out, looking at it again, that actually she didn't recommend, that was already in what they passed, which is kind of fascinating, that the legislature is removing not just, you know, civilian concealed carry holders, but also law enforcement from these exemptions. So law enforcement also now, because they didn't accept the governor's changes, it's a more limited ban on carry because it only applies to assault firearms. So generally speaking, things like AR-15s, mm-hmm. and, you know, if you just carry a standard pistol, now, you know, you carry a pistol with a threaded barrel, that could be a problem, depending on some of the other features on your gun. But for the most part, you know, most people are likely not going to be directly impacted by that. People who, you know, open, it's usually going to be like political demonstrations, people who open carry in Richmond during lobby day, for instance,
right.
They're going to be impacted. And that, I think that was the intended target of yeah. this ban, frankly. They've kind of been going after people who carry during lobby days since 2020, right? They passed like a temporary ban on carrying on the Capitol grounds. They've been doing this. They've been ratcheting up the restrictions since then because they don't like the display of people carrying it as a protest to stricter gun laws. So it's still, yeah. And I do think your overall point here, like, the governor lost on the most significant changes because she didn't get the magazine carry ban that she wanted. It is, and why that is a great question. It does seem more likely to be sort of an interpersonal thing between the legislature and the governor than maybe some sort of ideological opposition from the legislature. But, you know, you never know. I mean, I guess the legislature goes through this whole process to try and get the deal that they think they can be happy with. And, you know, I'm sure they're resistant yeah. to wanting to make big, significant changes to those things. Maybe that's part of it. But she also lost on the hospital gun ban. She wanted to remove exemptions to that. There's a mental health hospital gun ban that's passed. And in it, from the legislature, they had an exception for anyone who gets written approval from the facility itself. And so that could be, you know, a doctor with a concealed carry license, or maybe even more importantly for some of these Democratic lawmakers, armed security, right? Like the governor recommended taking out this exemption, and it made it so literally the only people who could carry at a hospital that offers mental health treatment, which is most hospitals in Virginia, from our reporting and my understanding. But it would just be for active duty law enforcement, essentially. So people, law enforcement while on duty. So you could not have armed security. You could not have staff carrying, even with permission, even if the hospital wants that to happen. Mm-hmm. So, that was another pretty significant move that the legislature said no to. And most of the stuff they said yes to, honestly, were relatively small changes. You know, changing the term buyback to sell back,
right?
Literally just terminology, nothing about how the law works. Yeah. That's voluntary, by the way, for that program. But adding, or some of them moderated the laws a little bit. They added just regular gun locks as one of the things you could use to comply with the safe storage law that they passed. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you're still getting a massive change in overall gun policy. Most likely, unless she does go ahead and veto the assault firearm sales ban, which is very unlikely. At the end of the day, you're still going to have Virginia in a position where it's much further left on gun policy than it was beforehand.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, and getting back to the gun and magazine ban, I do wonder, and by the way, it may be that, you know, there's more than one reason why the lawmakers rejected this, right? It could be interpersonal conflicts, could be that, you know, I wonder if that would not have made Virginia's assault firearm ban different enough from, you know, what's in place in Maryland, for example. Even though the Fourth Circuit has upheld magazine bans too, that it would not be a little bit easier to challenge this in court, right? It would be kind of a new animal, so to speak. So You know, conceivably a federal district judge could take a fresh look at the Virginia law and not have to depend on what the Fourth Circuit said about Maryland's gun ban and magazine ban. So, you know, maybe that was a concern of some Democrats that, you know, it opened it up to litigation. And, you know, honestly, we'll see what happens next session. That's the other thing people need to keep in mind. This is year one of Spanberger's 4-year term.
Yes,
you know, Democrats, we don't have elections. We don't have legislative elections in Virginia this year. So Democrats have another year, another session to come back and, you know, remove the grandfather clause for magazine possession or even possession of assault firearms, as we've seen in Rhode Island this year. Yep. They can come back with that $500 excise tax for suppressors that failed in committee. They can impose the 11% excise tax on guns and ammunition. You know, there's a lot that they left on the table that never got to Governor Spanberger that gun owners need to be aware of. But as you say, as of July the 1st, Virginia is going to lurch leftward in terms of respect and our ability to exercise our right to keep and bear arms. I know we'll be talking again between now and then, but, you know, from your conversations with folks like Phil Van Cleve and others, do you get the sense that a lot of these bills are going to be challenged in court? Do you think that we're really going to be focusing on one or two bills like the assault firearm ban and, you know, maybe the storage laws? What's your sense from, you know, your conversations with the Second Amendment activists?
Yeah, I think you'll get a lot of these. I mean, it's a lot of pests, right? There's a lot of bills here. We're only talking about a small fraction of the, I think there's about 20 bills that have gone through that include new gun restrictions of some kind. And I do think, I mean, I don't know if you'll get all of them challenged in court, you know, something like the reciprocity, that they've removed the reciprocity law that, or they've amended it or changed it. Right now, Virginia recognizes every other state's concealed carry permits, whereas under this law, it'll go back to the old system where the attorney general will get to decide who to have reciprocity with. And if I know you certainly remember this from, I guess it's probably been 6-7 years now, and maybe a good signal of how gun politics have changed here, and especially for the Democratic Party in Virginia in that time. But there was a previous attempt to basically break off all reciprocity with all their states under a previous Democratic Attorney General. And that backfired politically at the time, to the point where Democrats ended up acquiescing to pass this bill that made Virginia recognize every other state's concealed carry permit. And so they're undoing that now and going back to the old system. That's probably a harder thing to challenge. I think we haven't seen a lot of lawsuits around that particular point, as far as, you know, the state's ability to create its own compacts with other states for reciprocity. But you probably are going to see a pretty good flood of cases, especially against anything, whether it's the assault firearms carry or sales ban. Probably get both of those challenged, I would imagine. The 18 to 20 year old handgun ban, that's been a hot area of gun litigation, restrictions on 18 to 20 year olds, which itself, that law was born out of the legal challenge to the state's previous universal background check law.
Right.
And that, you know, the solution to the problem they had, where you know, there was essentially this background check law for gun sales, it said you can't buy a gun unless you go through background check. Well, 18, 20 year olds, they can't go through the background check system for handguns at the federal level. There's
a denied, right.
Restriction on it. Yeah. And so that was what caused the law to fail in court. So their solution to that was to make it illegal for 18 to 20 year olds to buy handguns. And I think that probably will become, you know, another key area of litigation. You know, maybe the hospital ban, some of these sensitive places restrictions that they're putting in, you could see challenges to that essentially. You know, they expanded the red flag law. Maybe some of the, you know, if you get the right plaintiff in a case against the red flag law. So there's certainly, I think, going to be quite a bit. And it seems one of the things that's notable too is you're likely to have the Department of Justice come in and file a suit. The harm you've done at the Civil Rights Division has already threatened to do that. And there's good reason to think she'll follow through. She's already suing Washington, D.C. over its assault and ban. And so you'll probably have that'll be really interesting to see how that plays out, because that's a new kind of factor to consider that we haven't seen much of in the past. The Department of Justice hasn't been filing cases like this, even under the first Trump administration or, you know, the Bush administration or anything like that, under other Republican administrations. So that's a new factor to consider in how these gun rights groups choose to litigate. And I know for BCDL, Phil Van Cleve told me on last week's episode of our podcast that they plan to pursue state-level lawsuits to go through the state court system. They think that's a better use of their resources. So, you know, you'll have multiple tracks, I think, running against the same laws at the same time.
I think Phil's right. I mean, particularly, you know, you look at like the handgun sales ban for 18 to 20 year olds, the Fourth Circuit, which controls Virginia, has already said, no, 18 to 20 year olds, they don't have the right to purchase a handgun.
Yeah.
I think state court is probably the only viable option for Second Amendment groups, at least in that issue.
Stephen, that's a good point, too. It's going to be a struggle.
We're running out of time here on my free Zoom stuff. So, I want to thank you for coming on the program today. Make sure that you are following Stephen and what he's doing at The Reload. Check out The Reload podcast every week and subscribe to TheReload.com for the latest Second Amendment analysis. Stephen, as always, appreciate you joining me on the program. Looking forward to popping up on your podcast before long as well. In fact, yes. I think this week.
This week, yeah. So we'll be able to continue the conversation over on my show.
Excellent. That sounds great. Stephen Gutowski with us here on Bearing Arms, Kim & Company. Right, thanks to Stephen for joining us on the program and looking forward to continuing the conversation over at The Reload. I think that will probably be released over the weekend, but... again, check out TheReload.com and you can find out for sure. All right, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Nevada. DNA linked suspect to UNLV rape, according to police. And the suspect in this case, well known to police, 36-year-old Jordan Grady is a convicted felon who was already on probation for attempted residential burglary when he allegedly assaulted a woman in her apartment back on April 14th. He is charged with 14 separate felonies in that case, including 7 counts of sex assault, along with counts of kidnapping, battery by strangulation, battery with intent to commit sex assault, burglary, coercion, and assault. Police say that Grady was arrested after a man wearing all black and a ski mask into the victim's apartment at 2 o'clock in the morning and sexually assaulted her at knife point. The arrest report states that the victim started to fight the suspect over the knife, causing the victim to get cut on her arm. The police report says the victim suffered multiple other injuries in the attack as well. Police were able to link Grady to the attack via DNA, according to the arrest report. Police said that Jordan... Grady is a 2-time convicted felon for residential burglary and attempted residential burglary, but he also has an extensive arrest history in Nevada, including multiple domestic batteries, owning a firearm by a prohibited person, DUI, possessing a gun under the influence, robbery with a deadly weapon, as well as other gun and drug charges. It's unclear... Again, his convictions are for residential burglary and attempted residential burglary. His arrests are for a wide variety of offenses, including several violent crimes. So it's unclear why Grady was not convicted of those crimes. Whether those cases are, at least some of those cases are still in the pipeline in the criminal justice system, whether some of those charges that he was originally arrested on were dropped in lieu of less serious charges that he was able to plead guilty to. And that may very well be the case. The Las Vegas Review Journal reports that his most recent sentence, 2 years probation with a suspended 2 to 5 year prison sentence for an attempted residential burglary conviction just last year.
again, you have to wonder, well, what were those original charges? And given, again, at least the extensive arrest history, was there reason for prosecutors to believe that that Grady posed a threat to the public at large? And if so, then why offer him a deal that results in nothing more than a suspended prison sentence and probation? I hope that these are questions that the media in Las Vegas will ask going forward. I don't know that they will. But those are the questions raised by Grady's most recent arrest, again, accused of very violent crimes against a woman in her Las Vegas home. On to today's armed citizen story from Detroit, Michigan, where prosecutors say a triple fatal shooting at a gas station was an act of self-defense. Why do we need more than 10 rounds? Because you might not just have one attacker. How about? This happened on April 19th, just a couple of days ago. So it's fairly unusual for prosecutors to say so quickly, yeah, this was self-defense. We're not filing any charges. I mean, in some cases, you know, where the evidence appears to be pretty clear cut, the armed citizen waits for months for that official determination from the district attorney or prosecutors. That didn't happen here in Wayne County. So April 19th, there was a car crash involving a vehicle occupied by the three individuals who were shot. Lester Owens, who's 24, 24-year-old Jasmine Sheeler, and 19-year-old Trevor Sheeler Jr., all from Detroit. The other vehicle had the armed citizen. So there was this initial crash, right? And then the three people who were killed followed the driver of the other car to a gas station there in Detroit. Assistant Prosecutor Maria Miller said in a press release that while they were there at the gas station, the three left their vehicle, went over to the other car, to the driver's side door, opened the driver's side door, and then engaged in a, quote, physical altercation with the driver. She went on to say that during that physical altercation, the suspect, who was seated in the rear of the vehicle, fired a weapon, fatally wounding the three victims. Now, I don't know why Miller referred to the three who were shot as victims and referred to the armed citizen, who she says acted in self-defense, as the suspect. Because I actually would have flipped that verbiage around. The three suspects who physically assaulted the driver of this vehicle, who then acted in self-defense, right, as he was being victimized by the three suspects. That, to me, is the right way to put it. But I guess I won't argue semantics there with the prosecutor, given the outcome of the investigation. Detroit police officers were called to the gas station about 3 o'clock. You know, on the morning of April 19th, they found a Jasmine Sheeler with a gunshot wound to the chest. Owens and Sheeler Jr. were shot in the head. Prosecutors said that the 22-year-old, acted in self-defense, which they note is legal under Michigan law if a person believes it is necessary to use deadly force to prevent imminent death or serious bodily harm. Miller wrote, after a careful review of the facts and evidence, the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office has determined that the warrant will be denied for insufficient evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the suspect did not act in lawful self-defense and in defense of others. On to today's good deed of the day. In the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. A man in Wayne, New Jersey, home of, I don't know if there was home to Fountains of Wayne, but certainly the namesake of the band Fountains of Wayne, able to save his neighbor from a serious fire. The neighbor in question happened to be an off-duty firefighter named Alex Fuentes, who saw the smoke and the flames quickly responded, running into his neighbor's home and pulling out an individual described as an elderly resident. According to local media, the victim of that house fire was taken to local hospital for smoke inhalation. Thankfully, it looks like they're going to be okay. Looks like they're going to recover. The fire was extinguished. No other injuries were reported. Looks like the damage to the home pretty extensive. So when that individual gets out, they are going to be looking for a new place to live. And hopefully Alex Fuentes and other neighbors will be able to help him in that situation as well. But in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing off the clock, but still on the lookout. Alex Fuentes, we thank you for your very, very good deed. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again on Monday. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com. Between now and then, we're going to keep you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Gun ban bills passing in Connecticut. We will have more defensive gun uses for you. Hopefully, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, we've got to get this decision from the Third Circuit regarding New Jersey's ban on so-called assault firearms or assault weapons and large capacity magazines at some point. Oral arguments were 6 months ago. So maybe it'll happen today. Maybe it'll happen tomorrow. If not, well, I guess we'll just keep waiting impatiently. But anything that breaks, legally speaking, we've got you covered at Bearing Arms as well. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. You'll get all kinds of great benefits no matter what tier of support you choose and no matter what tier you decide on. You will be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms, and I want to thank you for that very much. Hope that you have a great rest of your week and a good weekend. I am going to be on raccoon hunting duty after an attack on my chickens last night. So I'm going to be laying the traps this afternoon and on the lookout tonight. Hopefully I'll have some good news to report to you on Monday in that regard as well. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.